do the interview.
Oh, you mean like separate? Well,
yeah.
But
yeah.
They could always.
You
want to
get going?
Yeah, let's get going because I got a 6:30. I got to.
Okay.
Okay, hold on.
I'm going to mute you guys and get started.
We'll start with.
Tell Alan to get his ears.
Alan, need you on headphones, sir.
Here we go.
From Studio A in Podcast Village, Upper Georgetown, Washington, D.C., this is the best political talk show you've never heard of. It's Backroom Politics with your host and moderator, Justin Russell.
Hey, out there in Radio Land, it is time for the best political podcast you've never downloaded. In studio with me, I have to my left the former State Department communications guru we know as Aaron Harbaugh. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, Justin.
And across from me, he is the former Undersecretary of Commerce for International Trade, the one we know as the Honorable Alan Moore. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
And to my across at my 1:30, we'll call it, he is the Democratic political operative and bar license attorney in the great state of Maryland and District of Columbia, Dan Lipner, Esquire.
You weren't a navigator in the Coast Guard, were you?
Well, I was actually.
I think it's more like 2 o'clock here.
If I'm sitting like this, you're like at my 1:30.
Yes, as you rotate the bow of the ship, the angle differs. Shocker on that one.
And
oh my God!
Yeah, here we go. The behind the glass, we have Charlie Burney, our proprietor and host here, and of course Emma, the engineer, keeping us honest.
She's here,
and Maddie, the Emma, the producer, and Maddie, the engineer, keeping us honest back behind the glass too. Thanks, Emma. Thanks, Maddie. It's we record this on a Tuesday, which means that it's probably somebody's putting paper inside a ballot box. Or depending on where you're from, if you're from Iowa, you're getting counted and not getting reported. That was a complete and total fiasco. In case you missed it, it took a week, Dan, to get 100% calculation on the total results. We just got those as of recording day today, where they said Pete Buttigieg won by 26.3%. Bernie Sanders 26.3%. Bernie Sanders got 26.2%, and then everybody else following behind.
Well, to be clear, that's of the pledged delegates, not necessarily the actual turnout. Because for the first time ever, because Iowa thought, hey, let's make this even more confusing, they decided to report the actual turnout of voters, in which case the numbers for Bernie look to be 6,000 higher than everyone else. However, because of reporting errors and if you've ever seen one of these caucuses, counting the human beings is its own thing.
So here's a question. Here's a question, Dan. Joe Biden's campaign, and obviously you would know, correct me if I'm wrong, was reported by a couple of sources as being the first one that kind of questioned the integrity of the results that were coming in. How did that come about?
Talking first because the phone happened to ring first, it's everyone questioned it. The whole thing was a mess.
What, in your view, happened?
The IDP did a horrendous job.
IDP being the Iowa Democratic Party
did a terrible job of both training people, installing an additional step in the process, which was a solution in search of a problem, which, by the way, created a problem, which is this app, which was just foolishly conceived on its face. Add to that, there is now also the credible reporting of the trolls on the Republican side that also apparently decided to jam up the phone lines that were the backup plan for reporting. But that still doesn't leave the IDP off the hook, because one of the other backup plans about taking pictures of the actual tabulation sheets that to send to a dedicated email address at the IDP, which was, by the way, not checked for more than a day. So which error of problems would you like to address first? It all basically lands squarely at the feet of the IDP, and therefore then leading to all these other conspiracy theories, which the Bernie folks were happy to start talking about. And then, of course, add to, yes, well, nowhere near as loud or as fervent as the right-wing loony bin crew. The left did, of course, chime in with Sheila Jackson Lee. I'm sorry, I'm going to use her name there because she is just that wonderful. Said, I think the Russians were involved there. Let me be clear. The Iowa Democratic Party has nothing to do with the Russians. The IDP did
Ukraine?
This on their
was it
own.
Ukraine? Yeah, it was China. It was China or a 400-pound guy in a basement
it
eating hot pockets.
It wasn't part of a disinformation campaign?
No, it was not. Okay. Alan Moore, everybody now is saying that this makes the caucus, and Iowa should not be the first state to do a caucus, which both should be obsolete and taken away. Is that fair? In this instance?
Yeah, when we talked about this last week quite a bit, saying if the one thing we were all unified in predicting was that this will be the last time that Iowa plays this role in a future contest.
And when we recorded last week, we didn't know what was going to be the outcome.
We didn't know how bad it was going to be. That's correct. But when they couldn't even get the result, there's a little bit of a question, and Dan pointed out that this year they decided that reporting the raw vote along with the delegate count would be a good thing, and what that gave us was Bernie Sanders claiming to have been the victor, and it had in Iowa because he actually had more votes but not as many delegates, and it was the refrain that we got. Last presidential election from Hillary Clinton, she had more votes but didn't win the election. Yeah. So, but she could certainly claim victory. But unfortunately, she was not allowed to take the office.
Real quick.
So I do need to have one clarification. I did get a chance to see all the campaigns at work and those who were on the Democratic team and those who were not. I was based in Dubuque, Iowa. Got to know some of the other campaign staffs a little bit, and just talking to them. The only campaign that did not play nice with others at all was Team Bernie, which is a problem that is not going to go away anytime soon. But also something to make note of, in mild defense of the IDP and a shot at Bernie Sanders himself. Normally, I'll take a shot at his campaign, not the candidate. But the candidate who was not a Democrat until he was running for president last time promptly dropped out of the Democratic Party after not being the nominee last time and then jumping back into the Democratic Party, not realizing exactly how hard it is to maintain party structures in the off season. It is real work. The presidential cycle comes around once every 4 years. There's a lot of work on the ground in not just all 50 states, but smaller Democratic parties in cities and counties throughout this country. For the Team Bernie to sit there and talk about the Democratic Party not being representative of him when he's been a Democrat for about 15 minutes is a problem, and it ignores how hard it is to do this stuff. Some professionals that do this, but everyone else of the, I believe it's 1,600 caucuses throughout Iowa, they're all volunteers. Every last one of them.
Doesn't this go towards a larger problem in the Democratic Party that, you know, with the upswing of Bernie, the upswing of Mayor Pete, even Klobuchar is seeing a big uptake going into New Hampshire.
You mean democracy is allowing people to rise and fall with the tides of the public?
But what I'm saying is, doesn't this expose a bigger problem inside the Democratic Party that they cannot control the message? The message is being controlled by Bernie saying, this is rigged against me. And we don't hear Tom Perez or anybody.
The Republican Party is currently being run by somebody that 16 other candidates thought was.
I'm talking about the Democratic Party.
I understand that. And a scant 3 years ago, the Republican Party got taken out by a guy who everyone else on the stage said was not competent to be president. Yes, the Republican Party establishment lost everything to Donald Trump. The Democratic Party, as is the case every campaign cycle, gets redefined by who the candidates are and whoever the cream is that rises from the crop.
I mean,
now Team Bernie has an argument out there, and his vote and his supporters have a legitimate gripe. And the Team Bernie also has a legitimate point to be made as far as how he's getting his contributions and how he's been running his campaign.
All, right, but,
all of that's legitimate.
But Alan, I mean, Alan Moore, to me, it seems like Bernie's pushing all the right buttons. His ground game is amazing. His grassroots politicking is old school enough to get a lot of the younger people excited against with him. It just seems that which is the bigger issue for the Dems? The fact that Bernie is showing the success that he has, although he finished second in Iowa, or is it the fact that Bernie is driving the message and the rest of the party is having to play catch up?
Well, it's still really early, and you know, we talk about how well Bernie's doing or came in second. He had this time about half the number of votes he had last time.
Right.
He had about almost half last time against Hillary Clinton. They were really close. And he had about 25% this time. Now, there's a lot more candidates.
A lot more candidates. But the numbers were flat compared from.
There were about the same number of total participants. And so, you know, you can say he almost won, but he almost won with half the number of votes that he had 4 years ago.
Right.
He's got enthusiasm. Dan had this close-up look of how things were on the ground, which I found fascinating, some of the information he was sharing over the course of the week of who was well-organized, who played well with others, even today talking about how, you know, the Bernie folks looked a little different, acted a little different. I don't give the candidate a free pass,
right,
for how his organization functions. It's sort of like blaming staff of governors and senators for mistakes that the person at the
right
top made. But it's fascinating to kind of reflect on it and to think about the impact.
Right.
That something like that can have on national elections.
Yeah. So, and Dan, please do not take this the wrong way when I ask this question. It's not a dig at Biden, but I'll ask you the question. I was going to go to Aaron, but I'll go to Aaron next. Is it surprising that? Let me rephrase it. Which is the bigger issue? Is it the fact that we're seeing the upsurge of Mayor Pete and Amy Klobuchar in Iowa, or is it the fact that it seems the Biden camp, I mean, I don't want to say that they're hemorrhaging, but they can't seem to maintain traction. Which is the bigger issue?
Well, the thing is, politics is hard. So going back to the 2007 cycle, John McCain was left for dead, so much so that he was having a wildly difficult time
raising money.
There was a famous picture of him flying coach to a political event halfway across the country because
right
his campaign was trying to save dollars wherever it could. The Biden campaign most certainly is having its challenges. However, Joe Biden, from the point he jumped in the race, became an instant front runner and thus had the target on his back, as front runners do. The Mayor Pete is now enjoying part of that front runner status, and lo and behold, he's now trying to answer some hard questions about his two terms as mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And that's fine. That's part of what the national vetting process is. Amy Klobuchar in the last debate kind of gave him the nice little bit of chin music where she pointed out that Mayor Pete would have rather been home watching cartoons rather than watch the impeachment trials. Politics is tough business, and that was a little bit of noise to make sure people understood exactly how young he is. And by the way, he was a former mayor of a town of 160,000,
something over 100.
Yeah.
So the which is a different creature than Mayor Bloomberg, who is a mayor of the city that is the center of the financial world.
So that is relevant government experience.
And of Mayor Obama.
Yeah.
Oh wait.
So there's a lot at play. Now, Amy Klobuchar is going to be next through the ringer since she is now also enjoying an upsurge. So as is proper during the cycle, everything should get tested. The voters should get a chance to see what it is not only these candidates are made out of, but how they respond in those situations, and also a legitimate look at what their record has been to this point. The Steyers and the Andrew Yangs of the world are kind of floating out there. I suspect Steyer's billionaire lane is going to get knocked off by Bloomberg with a quickness. And Andrew Yang has been talking economics, which is kind of his own thing.
Yeah, but that brings up a bigger issue is, you know, we just had going from the Iowa fiasco into what's happening in New Hampshire. Aaron, we saw the Democrats line up on stage in New Hampshire for the final debate before the New Hampshire primaries. The 300-pound gorilla in the room is obviously Michael Bloomberg, who was not on stage. Is this quickly becoming everybody, you know, chasing the ghost of Michael Bloomberg? Is he that much of a factor in everybody else looking over their shoulder?
I don't know if we really have a good precedent for this kind of candidate. I mean, Dan would
or an actual billionaire running for president.
Better, no. But his role or non-role in this, you know, and obviously there was those recordings that were released today. It will be interesting to see how those remarks.
Be clear,
out.
The recording's about stop and frisk. And
yeah, right. and you know, the racial undertones. Obviously, I think that could send his campaign in another direction.
Yeah, Alan Moore. I mean, is this?
I don't think they're looking over their shoulders yet at Bloomberg because they're all fighting among themselves. But when it filters out a little bit after South Carolina and Nevada, and we probably are down to maybe three live ones still, that Bloomberg continues to get larger and larger. And we had to
But he doesn't have to show up on stage.
Well, he's now, they're changing the rules. I think in Nevada he's going to be on the stage because they've modified the rules for qualification. Because they think, and I agree with the Democratic Party on this one, this guy is now up in the 14-15% range potentially nationally, and he's here to stay. He doesn't have to go worry about raising money. We need to get him up on stage. We need to see how he does in the heat of the moment, and get him into the arena directly. But I don't. Right now, they're worrying about each other. Because they want to be one of those who is in the top two or three, in another month, on March 3rd or maybe or March 4th after Super Tuesday. That's when you'll really start thinking a lot about Bloomberg, because presumably he'll still be in it, unless somebody emerges. Doesn't look like, I think he's so in now that this isn't going to happen. That, remember, he got in here in the first place because he started getting nervous that somebody who was not
Joe Biden.
he would have been happy, I think, with Biden had Biden done better.
Right.
But it was clear that Biden was stumbling.
Right.
And I think he got really worried about Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders in particular, and what they might try to do to the country and whether they would succeed in beating Trump, which again is Bloomberg's primary objective. And
Bloomberg's going to bankroll this thing whether he gets a nomination or not. He's already made that clear. But here's the question I've got for you, Dan, is the Klobuchar factor. Is Klobuchar literally went into New Hampshire with a $4 million raise between Friday night, the Friday before, which was debate night, and walking into New Hampshire on this past Monday. What is it? Because Amy Klobuchar, to me, doesn't fit into that mold of somebody who would just generate that much buzz that quickly in a Democratic Party this kind of parsed.
So I will be more politically correct in my analysis here, but I also don't want to demean at all Amy Klobuchar's campaign. To be clear, my analysis on the ground still stands. Amy Klobuchar's campaign has played error-free baseball. Both the candidate, her campaign, and her communications team have essentially done everything right. Now they haven't been the target of much wrath thus far.
I mean,
that's still been pretty impressive, since other campaigns have made mistakes that were entirely unforced errors, i.e., Elizabeth Warren. I'm answering your question here, Justin.
Okay, go ahead.
So part of her rise, and this is the now more politically correct term, there are folks within the Democratic Party that absolutely believe the next president of the United States should be a woman. And those folks, their single issue, that shift, while issue-wise is seemingly not obvious on its face, once you throw in gender, some of that shift from Elizabeth Warren to Amy Klobuchar, which I literally saw firsthand in a room, in the caucus room in Iowa, is a real thing. So it's not, the issues and who the actual candidate is, as far as who they are demographically, still matters to some folks. And to be clear, Donald Trump being president, as the misogynist that he is, beating Hillary Clinton as the first female candidate at the top of a ticket, still sits with some people very hard. And that may be something that has been overlooked, that is pretty obvious as far as the cycle.
Aaron, let me ask you, is the woman factor that much of a factor in not only the Democratic primary, but is the woman factor going to be that much of a factor moving into the general?
Well, I think, I mean, this is not my opinion, that most American women are not in favor of Trump as president. I think, personally, most women would want a candidate who is going to beat Trump. I think most Democratic voters want a candidate who is going to beat Trump, and that trumps gender. So I think if you look at it that way, I think there are many voters who that is very important to, who would ordinarily be more aligned with, you know, an issue voter. But I think given the stakes here and the game being what it is, I think that shapes perhaps the playing field in this regard.
Alan Moore, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what Dan was saying, because I agree with you, Dan, that there is, and I see it in my own household, a woman factor and a desire to not just get rid of Trump, but have a first woman president. And we've got two women who are still in play, but Warren is declining and Klobuchar is rising. If Klobuchar should beat Warren in New Hampshire, and if Warren's money should dry up, given the very large enterprise that she has built, and she has to start scaling back rather dramatically, I think that there really is a chance that some of the women who really want a woman, who were drawn to Warren, will transfer that loyalty to the other woman, assuming Klobuchar does reasonably well and is still involved. I think it's interesting factor.
But Bernie has a tremendous young college age, young millennial following for women.
I don't disagree with that.
No, but what I'm saying is the women factor big enough to trump the Bernie factor? Is it big enough to trump the I want to say legendary, but that's not the right word, the traditional Democratic powerhouse that would be Vice President Biden?
We don't know. I mean, there's a lot of women who like some of these other candidates. I mean, Buttigieg has his female following, and so does Biden. Long-term loyalties, so clearly does Bernie with the young folks. But I'm talking about this segment that Dan was talking about.
Now is our time segment.
The women who really want a woman And it's a powerful feeling in my observation among people that I'm close to. That doesn't mean that all women feel that way, but there are thoughtful women who do.
And does that convey to money? Does that convey to volunteers, boots on the ground? Is it that strong that it could help Amy Klobuchar moving into South Carolina and Nevada?
Well, that's where it's the proof is in the pudding. So, I mean, Hillary Clinton is a bad example to go with because her primaries were not as contested. Well, as far as in the traditional Democratic realm, we'll just take the Bernie folks as some slightly less traditional Democratic activists. In this time around, you have more a return to normalcy of the traditional Democratic actors. And those folks who show up, A, they don't show up all the time. They're not necessarily as motivated as Team Bernie. But it definitely helps. And the Klobuchar folks did something on a shoestring budget in Iowa, which should be commended.
Yeah,
and as Alan correctly pointed out, if Warren doesn't come out of the suburb of Massachusetts, i.e. New Hampshire,
I'm going to get a text full of people from New Hampshire calling out a suburb.
Did you not hear Elizabeth Warren say Massachusetts?
You're not Elizabeth Warren either. Come on, dude.
So if she doesn't come out of New Hampshire in a better position than she is, yeah, she's going to be in trouble because of how she built her machine, and also both the actual machine she has and her narrative that she built.
But how do they fix the issue? And again, I want to preface this that I don't have that feeling towards either Klobuchar or Warren, but there are many Democrats that I've talked to, mainline Democrats from the Midwest, that basically look at Klobuchar and Warren as Hillary 2.0.1 and 2.0.2, meaning that they're not necessarily that relatable. They're not necessarily that approachable. They don't give the sense of, you know, I want to go all in on this candidate to make her my first woman president. Is that a true problem?
I mean, this is where you have to ask the voters.
You're the Democratic operative.
I'm the Democratic operative, but I'm the Democratic operative who didn't get the Hopi Changey thing from the last Democratic president that a whole bunch of people did. So I am wise enough to know to trust there are things that I don't know, that there are people that have opinions and takes and that I do not necessarily hold that can actually win.
Dan, put on your woman hat and help and figure this out.
If only we had a woman in the room.
Okay,
so
here we go. Okay.
No, but it is worth. So I mean, I've been watching Elizabeth Warren for quite a while, and I was actually quite a fan of hers. But the folks who described Elizabeth Warren as being shrill on stage, I never saw it. However, after hearing the statement from many, many people, fine, I have to accept that there are people who believe this to be true, even though I do not.
Aaron, go ahead.
Well, as you know, Justin, and some of you others, that I do spend a lot of my time talking about women in politics with other men and women. And two of the observations that I find very interesting about Warren and Klobuchar, respectively, is, you know, getting back to the relatability issue. I think that Warren has always had a relatability issue. This is not my own opinion, but I've heard from many women that she's perceived as not very authentic. And I think that women candidates in general have a hard time balancing that, you know, projection of being a powerful candidate and presenting themselves in a way that seems authentic. But I think that Warren rubs a lot of women voters the wrong way in that respect. And in regards to Klobuchar, I know that this may be something more widely held in Washington, but I think that a lot of women value fairness and being treated fairly. And I know that, you know, there are rumors that Klobuchar has an issue with treating her staff, especially junior members of her staff, with equity. And I think that also bothers many women, and that, that those are going to be issues for those candidates moving forward, with women voters specifically.
Right, Alan.
You know, Aaron, when some of those stories about her treatment of staff first emerged, it was very distressing for particularly those of us who spent years working as a Senate staff person, as I did for 15 years. And so how somebody treats staff while they're a senator or just a person in life really gets your attention. Having said that, and there were some incidents that were painful for everyone to hear, including for her to hear. And I think, though, she, in fairness to her, she was listening and reflecting. And she initially was trying to explain herself, saying, I'm a really intense, demanding person, and I work really hard. And sometimes I think I've made the mistake of expecting everybody around me to want something as much as I do, work as hard. And I've been working on that. And the point is, that narrative popped up. It hung around. There were incidents that were described, and then it went away. And I pay attention. And I've not seen that stuff other than references to those stories from many months ago. And I'm guessing that that she took it to heart and probably pulled the people around her and said, I don't want to be that kind of person.
But does this have the danger of rearing its ugly head again now that she's on the upswing?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how she's treating her people. See, my guess is... And one of the great measures in the Senate is what kind of turnover do you have on your staff? And the woman from Maryland, Barbara
Mikulski,
was famous for rapid staff turnover, and there were some others in both parties.
She was a very tough woman.
So you just like that gets your attention. It's like, whoa, okay. And then there are others with extraordinary longevity. People that you wouldn't, I mean, Chuck Grassley from Iowa has had some senior staff people who've literally been around 30 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that either one of those measures says everything you want to know, but they do speak to values, behaviors that are desirable. I mean, our current president has, I think, the most rapid turnover in the folks around him of any modern president, which is relevant,
right?
But anyhow, I think that particular issue, I'm not saying it goes away. Old stories can come back. New stories can emerge,
which
could be very damaging, especially since that's a question that floats around. I don't know how many people.
I've heard some Democrats compare this, you know, Klobuchar throwing coffee cups at staffers in the office stuff, to much like the Mitt Romney, you know, using the binders full of women.
Well, that wasn't mistreating anyone.
That was just bad news,
kind of a silly thing.
Right. But the real issue here. So two things. So there's obviously the substance of the issue, and let's be clear. Politicians are human beings. Every last one of them is flawed. The question is how they publicly.
And they have stressful jobs. Let's also be clear about that.
Politics is hard.
Yeah.
But the question is also how do you deal with those problems when they occur? And as Alan has correctly pointed out, yes, that issue has come and gone. It was dealt with, and seemingly the evidence is already on the table. They handled it well. They handled it properly.
Right.
That is the error-free baseball. It's not the campaign's fault that issue was in the closet and was out there to come up, but how they dealt with it and resolved it and made it past. Yeah, she's still in the race and she's on the way to probably pretty good finish
again,
in New Hampshire.
But again, I want to bring up the point is the error-free baseball you were talking about in Iowa. Is that a matter of, you know, they didn't know what they were walking up towards, or was this rather be lucky than good type situation?
As I pointed out before, you can't predict everything. It's how you choose to respond. It's part of the crucible that is this testing and how we pick our presidents. It's an important thing. She's done well. You cannot deny that she has done well. Most people did not think she was going to survive this long.
Yeah.
There were candidates that raised $2 billion that are already gone. I'm making a joke about Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I know. We got that. But here's the thing is, she's doing more with less. I believe she's got less money than Warren does. She's got less money than Bernie.
Well,
and
the question
Biden.
Is, what does she do with more when she has more? Which is seemingly with a better performance of what she's going to be turning to.
Right.
Now there are plenty of people who let it go to their head pretty quickly and squander it. That there's also those things have occurred. So
we don't want to mention any names, Elizabeth Warren.
So, yeah, so those kind of flameouts can happen. So Amy Klobuchar is going to have her moment in the sun, and the testing is going to get that much more difficult.
Aaron, you had...
I agree with Dan that obviously we need to stay tuned to how these two female candidates will react and respond and handle what comes next. And certainly, you know, we have been looking at what they've done in the past, but... You know, I think many voters look at candidates in terms of them, not just as a politician, but as a manager. And obviously, I think some of the dialogue that we had was related to that. But I think, you know, the standards that we place on women managers, and this has been well studied in the business world, are often different from men. And I think sometimes we have to also catch ourselves in how we evaluate people.
Right.
In regardless of the context, but especially in a political milieu, I think sometimes we look at certain behaviors as being positive or negative, depending on the gender who it's exhibited by. So it's just something I want to throw in for consideration. Yeah. But I think that definitely shapes the perceptions of Warren and Klobuchar.
No, that's a great point. I do want to talk about, and Dan, you can shut this down when it gets too deep. I have to ask about the Biden campaign. Just before I ask this question, let me just be clear. I've been a huge fan of Joe Biden. You know, I still contend that Uncle Joe should be vice president for life. But it seems whether it's the whole impeachment Burisma Hunter thing piled on to the stress of running for president, it seems that it might be taking a toll on the campaign and his ability to message and message correctly. Am I misreading this?
I mean, Joe Biden is who Joe Biden is. You may have made note in his history, he's said things on open mics and occasionally gone off script. However, that's also baked into the cake. It's part of the Joe Biden charm.
You have to account for that as part of the campaign.
No, you have to account for it as part of the campaign. He's also 77 years old, and this is his fourth run for president.
I think he's 75.
Anyway.
So it's as Alan's probably going to reach for his phone to fact check this. Joe Biden is who Joe Biden is. And
how do you respond? Let me just ask this. How do you respond to the commentary that the campaign and Joe himself is coming off the rails? He doesn't have much longer in this cycle.
I don't necessarily think that is true, in part because nobody is showing a commanding and I believe the Wikipedia is proving me right. Nobody has taken a full command of this process yet. Traditionally, out of Iowa and New Hampshire, there is somebody on a roll. We have yet to have that. We have yet to have anyone seemingly breaking 30% anywhere. And Joe might actually be the first person to do that heading into South Carolina. The large African-American vote, that said, with the Bloomberg numbers creeping up, it might be biting into Biden's numbers. This could go all the way to the convention. Unless somebody takes a truly commanding lead and really starts to roll things out, this is going to be a long, long slog. and then it's anyone's game.
Did it strike you as on that Biden literally went into or hadn't even left Iowa, I believe, when he made the comment is, or no, it was in New Hampshire where he said we took a hit in Iowa and we're going to take a hit in New Hampshire. I would guess that that's probably not good for fundraising for a political campaign.
It also doesn't help.
Is he starting to see reality in some aspects?
It doesn't help things when you lie to people either. So
I get it, but I'm just saying.
You know, I read about that comment and then I missed because I drew
a lot of the cycle
because I missed the debate itself, and then I saw the comment, and it was I thought it was way overblown by the press because he said, you know, we really took a hit in Iowa and we will probably, you know, we'll probably have a problem here. He didn't use the same phrase. We're probably going to have some challenges here, which everybody knew. Everybody understood, and I didn't see it as some major concession the way some of the press commented. Now, it's maybe more important the way it was played than what was actually said, but when I saw it, because the first reports were kind of conceded New Hampshire, I thought, well, that's kind of strange, and then I saw it, and I thought, it fit the moment.
His exact quote was, we took a hit in Iowa. We're probably going to take a hit in New Hampshire. It's very simple. But as you pointed out, he pointed out the fact that he says, look, we're getting ready for South Carolina. We're getting ready for Nevada.
Well, he said, we'll probably take a hit here. I mean, you got two senators on the stage who live next door. He elaborated just a little bit.
That's true.
But again,
it's also a way of adjusting the expectation game. Now, it's worth noting, as you correctly said, the press doesn't always buy what you're laying down. And the question is, the story tomorrow is if Elizabeth Warren finishes in a distant third or fourth. What that means, since, yeah, that is her backyard. Bernie's backyard is apparently being more friendly to Bernie than Elizabeth Warren's backyard is to her. So that media narrative could spell something different.
And there's two other topics I want to hit before we finish up this episode, because obviously we've blown through the break. The first one is the Mayor Pete phenomenon. What is it, Alan, about a gay married lieutenant, JAG officer from the Navy, who has served in a theater of combat that comes back to his hometown of South Bend, Indiana, becomes the mayor of, you know, maybe a second class sized city? I mean, we're not talking, this isn't Chicago, this isn't Atlanta, this isn't New York, this is South Bend, Indiana. How does he get from that all the way to now people are giving him a serious look? He pulled out the win in Iowa, and now New Hampshire, I've seen him in either first or second place.
One, no offense, Dan, but one, he's in a weak field. Two, he's smart. He's quick. He's attractive.
Funny.
He's extremely articulate.
Yeah.
And so he's this not just fresh face because he's young, but he's new and different, but he makes a lot of sense. Three, he is gaining money from, I'm convinced, I haven't looked at the data, but from the ever-growing LGBT living and supporting world that says it's time, almost like with Obama, it's time for an African American, it's time for a woman, it's time for a gay
president,
and pour in the money. And I'm convinced there's a fair amount of money that's associated with that. And then there's all this ridicule of him running a city of 100,000.
Well, the advertisement
and being a mayor for 8 years of a city in modern times in the Midwest that's
of 100,000 people.
100,000 people that's been hit hard by change in the American economy is not nothing. It's significant hands-on local experience And although the, you know, the national politicians would like to poke fun, right, put it down, et cetera, you're in charge.
Well, that's what surprised me is, you know, everybody was jumping on. I mean, the comment about, or the, what was it, the advertisement, the anti Mayor Pete advertisement that said, oh, the greatest thing he ever did was pick different colors for the river and the bridge. Is that type of approach saying, hey, here's this young gay hick from South Bend. What does he know?
No. Nobody in Democratic politics is going to say anything about his sexuality in a negative way. Yeah.
I'm not saying Democrats. I'm saying,
well, at the moment we're talking about the Democratic primary.
You're referring to his electability.
Yeah.
Well, you're also talking about an ad that Joe Biden put forward.
Right.
So I will say that the ad was ill-advised.
Let me rephrase. But you understand that where I'm going with this is, can he overcome the taking away, just talking about the Democrats right now, the hick mayor from the Midwest?
Again, the mayor of a city of 100-something thousand.
Klobuchar did the same attack too.
Well, shockingly enough, everyone wants to win, and in order to win, sometimes you got to take votes from the other guy, and sometimes to take votes from the other guy, you got to hit him. So that's part of that.
So I think we were reacting both to the gay reference, but also to the hick reference. He's no hick. Nobody's calling him a hick. The guy went to Harvard. He was a Rhodes Scholar. What they're doing is trying to put him down as inexperienced,
correct,
because he only was mayor of a medium-sized, smallish town.
He also has, street cred in terms of his military experience and, foreign policy.
He is the only veteran in the field.
I think that's not to be ignored. And as you point out, Justin, he's the only,
veteran
in
the field.
So I think that, and I just personally, thinking of him, a lot of the images of him, serving in Afghanistan really stand out in my mind. And I think that's something that voters do appreciate.
And let's be clear. The tone of the advertisement with the colors and the river and the bridge, the tone that Klobuchar took on stage regarding his experience in government, it was condescending. They may not say the words hick mayor from the Midwest. The undertones are
I think you're carrying your own baggage this fight.
Why?
Justin.
Yep.
So
no, did you watch the debate?
I absolutely watched the debate.
Did you not watch the Amy Klobuchar's comments about it?
I'm the person who said on the show the Amy Klobuchar line about watching cartoons rather than watching the impeachment trial was a dig at his age and his inexperience. There is nothing to imply he's a hick. And nobody who's ever talked to him would buy that argued that.
More that he was kind of childlike in terms of the cartoon reference.
He's 38.
No, I know, but in terms of that attack, quote unquote.
He would be by far the youngest president ever.
That's true.
Only 3 years into being eligible to be president.
So the bottom line here is America ready to elect a gay president? Because I've had this discussion with a lot of people. They sit there and they say, well, it's different than 2008 whenever we said, well, we'll never elect a black president. And as you put it, Dan, the Hopi Changey thing really kind of took off and we elected a black president. Do we see Hopi Changey thing happening here?
Well, it's never going to happen until it happens. So there's always somebody who's got to be the first. I mean, my argument against Mayor Pete, there's no denying his success should absolutely be credited. To go from being a small town mayor in Indiana to being a presidential front runner is something worthy of taking note. And to his credit, there is clearly some political skill that this man brings to the table.
I will tell you what gets me.
Can I finish the point?
Yeah.
There is also the big question. And while I am all about somebody who brings something different to the table, it is a huge leap from the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, to president of the United States, even surrounded by the best and brightest, which inevitably somebody would be. It is a huge jump.
You know what this strikes me as? And this is why I kind of like – this is why I
like
Mayor
Pete. I'm
going to
go out on a limb and say – South Bend, Indiana doesn't have a whole lot of major international security issues.
Hold on. You know what this is? I like the Harry Truman-esque aspect of this. you know, Harry Truman goes from a haberdasher in
to Congress,
Missouri,
to Senate, to Vice President, to the presidency.
And when he was picked as Vice President, they downplayed him. They gave FDR a whole bunch of crap, saying, why did you pick this guy, this Midwestern, and I'm going to use the term hick, to be your number two in the most powerful office in the country?
An argument that was much more credible against Harry Truman than it is against Mayor Pete. Harry Truman didn't finish college.
Let me give you some advice.
What?
This hick thing, run from it.
I need to drop
it.
I'm
not
going to
run from it.
It
just makes you look narrow-minded and ignorant. That's all. I'm trying to help you out here, man. I'm trying to help you out.
That's your opinion.
That's why I'm sharing it with you. I don't think you're helping yourself.
I appreciate it. But the thing about it is I like the fact that it's Harry Truman-esque. I like the fact that it's, he's coming from the Midwest.
It's not Harry Truman-esque.
Why?
Harry Truman was far poorer than Mayor Pete was.
You don't see any similarity with him just coming out.
A haberdasher for somebody compared to some guy who's a consultant at McKinsey? Wildly different background.
You got a point there.
As well,
he doesn't have a lot of dough. He's the poorest guy on the stage.
If you want to compare poor to poor, Harry Truman was poor before he entered public office, was poor while his entire time in public office, and he was poor after public office, so much so that John F. Kennedy had to give him a loan in his retirement because there was no presidential pension at the time.
That's true. That is true. Aaron.
I mean, Pete Buttigieg has an amazing education, as I know was briefly referenced. I mean, I think he's the only political candidate that can actually intelligibly speak a foreign language, you know.
I believe it's seven.
Yeah. I mean, he
learned Norwegian because he wanted to learn how to read their books.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly very erudite. And I think that's not as, you know, Harry Truman-esque. But I just want to touch on the gay electability factor. And, you know, when we look back at, you know, electability, I just want to briefly cite a Gallup poll who has been monitoring U.S. support for legal same-sex marriage since 1996. Which started out at 27% of Americans supported gay marriage. It's now gone up to 67% as of last year. And,
numbers moved at lightning speed.
It's remarkable. So, I mean,
Is that the Mayor Pete effect?
No, it's the Will and Grace effect.
It's become part of
the legalized gay marriage effect. Right. It's the Supreme Court decision effect.
Yeah,
and
culture.
Young people coming along open to it effect because there's still huge
demographics
age difference.
Destiny.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so over 2/3 of Americans, support, gay marriage. So clearly 2/3 of Americans don't necessarily have a problem with him being gay is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No,
you know,
fair.
And one more thing that when Dan was saying that, the problem is when you're a mayor of a town of 100,000, how ready are you to be president? But we don't know. Look who our current president is. He got elected because that's the thing. But look who else is on the stage. You've got in terms of foreign policy, for example. Mm-hmm. Beyond Biden, who chaired the Foreign Relations Committee and was a vice president and doing a lot, the rest of the group, yes, they've got some senators up there, but that doesn't mean they're ready. This is a really, really big job, and people get prepared in different ways, as Barack Obama showed.
Right.
Community organizer, state legislator, and a kind of a lucky accident senator becomes president.
It's all about the personal narrative.
Yeah, we'll see. We're going to keep an eye on it. We'll talk about New Hampshire. We'll talk about the Democratic race coming up in future weeks. On behalf of Dan Lipner, Alan Moore, Aaron Harbaugh, Maddie the engineer, Emma the producer, Charlie our host and proprietor and working the boards for us. You can follow us on our website, backroompolitics.org. By the way, I forgot to mention Rich Rubino. The reason why he's not here today, he is in New Hampshire, actually in the throes of Radio Row and the caucuses. You can download us as your favorite podcast on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google, Apple, TuneIn Radio, you name it. We're kind of a big deal now. And you can also check out our Patreon page coming up in the next week or so. Hey, have a great week, America. See you.